And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today's Wednesday, July 10th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. I'm here with Kevin. Please listen to us anyway. You get your podcast, like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. Give us a like. Give us a share. Take one of our posts, share it with your friends, and join our Facebook page. We want everybody on that Facebook page. We're trying to get up and up and up. We want that number to be very high. Today on the show, yes, it's a sports potpourri night. We're going to go around the world of sports. We're getting to the sports dead zone. We're going to start it off with some baseball. Locally, we got the Mets playing pretty well. We got the Yankees not playing pretty well. We're going to start there. Kev, let's start it off with some New York Mets.
Well, the Mets are winning tonight. Hopefully, this bullpen can hold this 5-2 lead. That's been the biggest challenge for them. After beating the Yankees and then beating the Houston in the first game, they got back above 500. They've gone, assuming they win tonight, 6-6 would be in the last 12. Game above 500, two games below 500, just that yo-yo back and forth. Why? The bullpen sucks. Plain and simple. There's no other way to put it. Since June 23rd, this bullpen has allowed 45 runs in 47 innings. That's an 8.61 earned run average. That's just atrocious.
That's some right good now, math.
If you're a Mets fan, there are exactly two guys in that bullpen you have any level of confidence in. Diaz. And even with him, all Mets fans are going to say right now until he comes back, you know, after the suspension, that shows that, yes, he's throwing strikes. Yes, it wasn't necessarily the sticky stuff that was, you know, giving him, you know, the edge that he had, you know, coming off the injured list there. Until he proves that he's back, you're still going to hold your breath. The only other guy in the bullpen you trust, and if you told me before the season that this was going to be the guy, Daniil Nunez.
Yeah.
Who?
Exactly.
The only two guys you trust. I mean, Garrett.
Yeah. Garrett's been good, Kev. Come on.
He was good early. He was really good early.
He's been bad lately. He's a journeyman type of reliever who had a good stretch here, and now he's out on the disabled list with elbow inflammation, and he's already reached a career high in innings pitched, and we're in July. Diekman's been awful. Ottavino's been awful. You know, they've tried these different guys. Adcock came up. He was bad in three games. They give Orzy this chance, you know, three batters, he's gone. He's back down in the minor leagues. Danny Young has been up and down. I mean, it's been awful. I mean, the fact that, you know, this trade for Phil Matone, you know, we're hoping that he can recapture, you know, being just a decent reliever that he was for Houston. I mean, he's a definition of just your average middle of the road relief pitcher. We're hoping he can be a savior. That's how bad it is with this bullpen.
You know you're in the same boat as a lot of teams in the majors, though, right?
I mean, we'll there are a lot of teams team in the like majors. That in about 5 minutes, won't we?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of teams in the majors with one good guy in their bullpen, and the rest of it is just so-so, and they hope they get good years out of this guy or good years out of that guy, and that's why this bullpen carousel keeps going round and round year after year.
I mean, we'll get to the minute. I mean, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but the Yankees signed Tim Mesa. You know, you look at the last 2 or 3 years, he's been good. This year, yes. He's been awful. Which Tim Mesa are you going to get? If he can bounce back to where he's been the last 2 years, great pickup for the Yankees. But this is the volatility of a bullpen year to year. Yeah, you don't know exactly what these relievers are going to do. As New York fans, we were spoiled watching the greatest reliever for 20 years. That we expect relievers to come in year after year and just be great. And not everybody's Mariano Rivera. Nobody's Mariano Rivera.
Unanimous entry into the Hall of Fame, we'll tell you that. First guy to get that.
The only thing is, a lot of those Yankee pens were good. They were only good for a year here or a year there, and it was a certain group of guys 1 year and not a different group of guys the next. But
yep. That's the way bullpens are. Exactly.
That's just the way the bullpens are.
I mean, Jeff Nelson held in for a while. Mike Stanton held in for a while. Graham Lloyd held in for a while. You had guys that battled. Then you had your David Weathers, you know, and you had a bunch of different guys on those Yankee teams. I'm going to take this from a different direction, all right? Just about the Mets and the bullpen, because they had a chance to win the Pirates series and they gave away the fourth game, right? But I don't want to read my quote. I'm going to give you Lenny Dykstra's quote, okay? Because Nails was upset. So I'm going to read his post, his little blast. I wanted to take a moment to talk baseball again, as I see another serious issue with today's game. I see that the Mets are in a game they can win and pull a young rookie pitcher with talent and a strong arm after about 75 pitches, after he's given up one hit and the Pirates are struggling in favor of their atrocious bullpen. This would cost the Mets the series win against the Pirates and give them another setback under 500 for no reason. They are not protecting anything with the pitcher. The pitch count limit is an arbitrary and made-up half science and is ruining today's young pitchers like Scott. You're going to train and condition him to never be able to go deep into games. Allowing him to go one or two more innings was never going to hurt him. It only hurt the team. Lenny Nails Dykstra. Now, when your bullpen is this atrocious, you have to stretch him. I'm sorry. You have a chance to win a series against a team that's in competition with you for the playoff berth. Now, listen, the Pirates are behind the Mets, but not by that much. It's a couple games. You can't afford to lose a game against a team you're competing with on the – not that the road is as big in baseball, but still, you had a chance to win 3 out of 4 against Pittsburgh, and you basically said, no, we're going to wave the white flag because we don't want to hurt this kid's arm for the future, and we're going to settle for the 2-2 split. Unacceptable. I mean, Lenny's right. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Disagree.
You're worried about pitching.
Okay, Gino, tell me why you disagree with your great knowledge of the right arm. Go ahead, show me about it.
It's June. Come on. It's
July.
So these games don't matter?
It's July.
You're not extending these guys out at this point. Not on a rookie who's barely pitched up here to begin with. Come on.
Are you kidding me? He gave up one hit at the point and they yanked him.
He was in
you
control.
Are much smarter than that, Darren.
No, you're much smarter than that, Gino.
I was much more upset to start before that. You know, you sent him down to the minors for a month because you're trying to limit pitch count. You're trying to limit innings. Okay, you bring him up. You could tell he got through the fifth inning the previous time out. He was starting to fade a little bit. You pitch him the sixth. He was struggling. You leave him in long enough to give up a home run and throw 99 pitches. That game you weren't worried about pitch count, but then the game after you decide when he's cruising with a one-hitter, you decide that game, oh, we have to worry about pitch count and 75 pitches. How about using your eyes and seeing what the pitch is doing? How about judging?
Mendy's been pretty good. I was a little surprised at that because Mendy's been pretty good.
That's a front office decision.
I know it is. It's not him. I agree.
We know that.
Only the front office and Gino thinks that.
Scott's pitched 39 innings. Come on.
And it's not like the same number. The same number in the minor leagues too.
That is not the way they train these pitchers nowadays. I'm not saying I'm in favor of it. It's just not the way they train these pitchers. These guys are not trained to do this.
If he
was a starting pitcher and he can't exceed 75 pitches, no, that's a joke, actually.
If he looks done, yes. But this guy was cruising. He just struck out. Who was his last batter he faced? I forget. He struck out his last batter.
I don't remember. I'm sorry.
No, he's got 2 outs, nobody on, coming off a strikeout. All right, we got to yank him because he's at 77. Ooh, this is Little League pitchers. I coach 12-year-olds. Their pitch count is 75 or 85. You're telling me a 23-year-old man can't throw 75 pitches in a damn game without having to come out? That's just bull.
I don't agree with computer nerds running the sport.
This is what happens.
I don't agree with it, but that is the way they are trained in the minors to pitch.
And that's why nobody can throw six innings nowadays.
That's right. Listen, Kev, I don't agree with it, but that's what it is. Okay? You can't do it.
Were pitcher injuries more prevalent or less back in the day? I just want to know.
You can't do it in the majors.
Less back in the day.
People pitch back in the day.
Majors. You need to do it in AA. That's where they start training them to do this. None of these guys are trained to go 8 innings and throw 110 pitches. They're just not trained to do that anymore.
In AA, they're trained to throw 50. In AAA, they're up to 60. major leagues. Oh, we get you to 70 in the major league, 75. Come on.
Listen, now,
it's just a bad job. And you don't have the arms in the pen. You got to let this kid ride.
I mean, we talked
so you're telling me, Gino, in September, you're going to be okay when they shut this kid down.
I'm sorry,
they shut this kid down in September because of innings. In September, they shut this kid down.
Okay.
And they're in the pennant race. And they put up a lesser pitcher. You think you sell that to the fan base pretty easy?
Listen,
they didn't sell me on it when they shut Jabba down back in the day.
And I'm not Jabba. Saying, it was I'm not one, saying one I agree with it. I'm not saying I agree with it. But that's the way they're going to run the organization, the way all these clubs are doing this. It's the same thing with the game pitch count. No one is taught to pitch anymore. They're taught to throw. They go out there and they throw as hard as they can for as long as they can. And when they're done, they're done. When they hit a pitch count, they're done. If it's five innings, if it's four innings, if it's six innings, it's done. That's just the way they're trained. So that's the way they're going to continue to do it. You want to retrain everybody? Start in double A. That's where you have to retrain everybody to start pitching again and not throwing. Once you do that, then you'll get guys who can throw 7-8 innings again and throw 125 pitches. But they're not doing it right now. That's not how the minors are working. So you're not going to get it up here.
And we're seeing more arm injuries than ever before.
Listen,
having double Tommy Johns. Now we're seeing all sorts of stuff. I'm waiting for the first guy to have three Tommy Johns.
That's coming.
I'm being honest. We're going to see it.
Shohei in 3 years. Shohei in 3 years. Tommy John.
Yeah,
it's pretty sad. Absolutely. I mean, listen, you know, I understand that the game has changed, but this is what happens when you let computer freaking geeks and not men run the sport. Sorry. This is what happens. They sit there and they analyze without feel of the sport. They don't even know the freaking sport. And this is where we get guys like Cashman. This is where we get guys like Stearns. Complete freaking morons. They're ruining the sport amongst other people. Blame Tony La Russa.
Okay, that's a good one at least, because now at least you're going back 10, 15 years when all this crap started.
Well, he started the crap. He started the crap if my starter goes five.
I know.
The fact that he did it in the same team that what's it called? That Billy Martin used to let his guys go nothing but complete games is hysterical. But you know, Oakland saw both extremes.
There's a balance somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Greg Maddux didn't throw 90. We'd like to
think that there is, but the guys who are training these pitchers, when they realize it, then we'll get that. I would hope there is, Kev, because the way this is happening is awful.
Yeah. We're taking out.
These guys aren't even pitching five innings.
You know, it's almost like, you know, starters are making so much money that they're afraid of them getting hurt. And then And you wonder in some ways if it's also driven by the fact that these front offices now say, well, these starters are going to command so much money. Let's limit the effectiveness of them. Let's make them five inning pitchers. Let's make this this concept of an opener so that you don't even get a starter. You get your bulk guy who's going to come in and throw four innings after a middle reliever is going to come in and start the game and throw an inning in the third. I don't know. Something's wrong here.
Yep. Let's move across town to the Yankees. Darren, you want to start?
Yeah, the Yankees haven't won two games in a row in nearly a month. Last time they did it was June. They won had a four-game winning streak against the Dodgers and Royals, which ended on the 12th. On the 13th, they blew a lead on the fourth game of a four-game set against the Royals, blown by one Clay Holmes. Almost a month later, they had a chance to win two in a row again, but on, you know, Friday night, one Clay Holmes blew another one. Listen, it's not a shot that I think Clay Holmes is a bad pitcher. I don't. I think Clay Holmes is a nice, solid eighth inning guy, but he doesn't strike you out. He doesn't get big outs against good teams, and he shouldn't be your closer. He gives you fool's gold to start the season every freaking year, and then all of a sudden, by now, it's done. It's over. He makes the all-star team. People, oh, he's a two-time. He's crap. He's a nice eighth-inning guy that now is the closer on this team. If you're going to make the trade for Soto and you're going to give up the young arms that they did and you're going to say, hey, listen, maybe they weren't the top of the minor league system, but King was a solid arm. Brito was a solid arm. They had a bunch of arms that they could use this year. And you're going to sit there and make that trade for a 1 year without a guarantee of having him for two. And then you're going to sit there and tell me that where we're going to go with the bullpen is Clay Holmes. Are you either all in or you're not? And you can't be half pregnant with this crap. And the problem is the inconsistency of the starters has come back, even though Hill was good last time out. And now the bullpen's horrible. We're counting on Luke Weaver to be like sometimes two innings in the seventh and eighth. Luke freaking Weaver has been the best guy.
And Kev, just like the Met bullpen, we got Clay Holmes as our best guy coming out of the pen, and everybody else stinks.
Luke Weaver's been good. It's sad. He's been good. He's awful. Been good.
When I looked, very short stint, but like a guy like Phil Bickford, the Dodgers, the Mets, he's been awful the last 4 years, and yet somehow the Yankees, let's give him a shot.
Yeah, but
and you know why? Short, because we have no starting pitching anymore because everybody goes five.
Yeah.
It's just hard to watch a little bit.
It's a big point because early in the year, this Yankee staff was pitching very well, and they've all come back a little bit now between Hill and Cortez and Stroman and Rodon. Pack a little bit now. You know, some of them worse than the others, but they've all come back to in the beginning of the season, they were pitching so well. It was all the way up here, and now they're back down to kind of average seasons for these guys. But, you know, the other thing with this Yankee team is there's no hitting. I mean, it's Judge, Soto, and nobody else. Everybody.
Ben Rice.
He's
been okay lately. I agree. I agree with you, by the way. You're 100% right. The hitting's inconsistent. Soto's in a little slump. You miss Stanton. Soto's in a little bit of a slump. Judge hasn't hit a homer in a week. And here's where we sit now. When Judge isn't hitting bombs, and the problem with this team is it's been all of it's just been bad. And there's nothing worse than during a summer grind watching bad baseball. Listen, we'll all tune in on a Sunday when the Jets suck or the Commanders suck, and we're going to tune in with the hope of that game. But baseball is a grind, and when your team is not competitive offensively or pitching-wise, it makes it really challenging. And they'd be getting blown out of a lot of these games. Not last night. And they're up tonight. Let's see if they hold it because we're all going to have to get to see Clay Holmes in the bottom of the ninth. But it's like there's nothing worse, nothing more than damaging. Kev can tell you that from watching in April and early May. It's just brutal to watch a bad baseball team. Gee?
Yeah.
Offensively, around the diamond, it's been Ben Rice, Gleyber Torres, Anthony Volpe, and lately DJ LeMahieu. And then the catcher tandem of Trevino and Wells. You know, listen, they've split. Before tonight, Trevino's played 46, Wells played 47. Darren, you and I were talking. We'd like to see Wells get some more starts. But, you know, Wells he's only hitting 210. Now, I know Trevino's hitting 244. It's not that much better. But, you know, these guys got to hit.
They run on Trevino a lot easier, though. They run on him. It's just frustrating.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
simply if they both suck, play the guy that stops you from running. That's all I'm saying.
DJ LeMahieu is hitting 206. LeMahieu's hitting 206. Gleyber's hitting 223. Volpe's hitting 249. And I don't even care about Volpe's 249. I like the 249. The problem is on base is 305.
And it's not even that. His OPS is now under 7. So he's slumping. And he's been streaky all year. High, low.
I thought we were going to get 275, 280 out of Verdugo. We're getting 245. Now, he's got some home runs. I get it. But, you know, it's like the whole team. If you don't have Judge's 32 and 83 and Soto's 21 and 63, you know, where the hell is this team without the 53 home runs and 146 RBIs before tonight?
Waiting for the offensive standard to come back. It's horrible. Listen. It's horrible on every front. It's horrible pitching. It's horrible hitting. I mean, I won't say the pitching's been horrible, but they've been enough where they've been blown out of games where it's just hard to watch. The bullpen has been, which started out so great, has gone back to the back of their cards. It's really been a challenge. Listen, again, the Yankees shouldn't go a month without winning two in a row. And that's what we're looking at.
Agreed.
And that's what we're looking at. Unless they win tonight and win tomorrow, it'll end up being a month. And so, that's really what it comes down to.
Despite all this, before today, there's 17 games over 500.
Exactly. But what seemed like a really secure lead has dissipated.
Yes.
In the wild card. I'm not saying they're not going to make the playoffs. I'm not going to say they're not going to right the ship, any of that stuff. I do think that they will. But the facts are the facts. They're slumping. And a team like Boston, and you got to give Cora credit. He's been really good. He's got that team playing great. That's not a talented team on paper, what you saw in the beginning of the season. When I look at the two leagues, Milwaukee's been playing over their head all year. Cleveland's been playing over their head all year. Now, all of a sudden, then you add Boston and St. Louis as two teams that have really kind of emerged as pretty good teams that didn't look like they showed it early on. And suddenly you don't feel safe about the Yankees, and there's another strong competitor against the Mets. These two teams have to get their acts together. Now, when you look at the Mets last time out, you know, Quintana finally, you know, lengthened a little bit. He pitched pretty well.
He pitched seven. Yeah.
He won seven. He's got to give you 6 2/3, seven innings every time out. He does.
Yeah.
You know, Severino is battling every time. He gives you length usually. They need a little bit more from that. And for the Yankees, they need Rodon to be the number two, and he's not doing it the last few starts. He battles like crazy, but he gives up homers early, and they're behind, and they're not scoring runs, like you said, G. And that's really where we sit with these two teams.
All right, so AL, you have over 500. You have Baltimore, New York, Yankees, and the Boston Red Sox. Then you have in the Central, Cleveland, Minnesota, Kansas City. In the West, Seattle and Houston. All those teams are over 500. In the NL, you have Philadelphia, Atlanta, the Mets. If they win tonight, they'll be over 500. Right now, they're exactly 45-45. Milwaukee and St. Louis in the Central, Dodgers and the Padres in the West. You know, there are not many teams. There are a couple in each that are close to 500. But after that, there's not – in the AL specifically, there's not a lot after those eight teams. In the NL, you got some teams that are bunched up right around 500. You know, San Diego at the last wild card spot would be 49 and 46. So they're only three over before today. So
lost today.
Right. And any of those teams that are right near 500 will have chances to get in at this point. But, you know, the gap in the AL looks like it's starting to widen a little bit. You know, of those teams, Houston's three games over, Kansas City six games over. And then it's either it's 10 or more. So a lot of those teams are almost, you know, it's going to – I don't know how much movement we're going to have. We're going to see. You expect some of these teams to move in the second half, but I'm not sure when we look at the teams and the records at this point, how many in the AL are really going to move.
Texas has the best shot just because of what they've done and the pitching that's coming back and all the stuff that goes along with it. That's the team that could make a little bit of run. Again, you're relying on pitchers coming off injuries that have good back of baseball cards, but we'll see what happens. And you know the offense is proven, even though not been a good year for Semien, not been a good year for not a great year for Seager, but the kid is freaking amazing. You know, Langford is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and one of the articles I actually read this week, Darren, because they started talking about the trade deadline. They were saying that over the next couple of weeks, if Texas doesn't look like they're doing anything, that they may be sellers and not buyers, which is really surprising after the championship. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it could very well happen if they don't start rebounding soon. You're 100% right, though. 100% right.
Yeah. All right, Darren, you got any stats for us?
Well, yeah, just a couple. I just want to read you three guys. I want to compare Aaron Judge, Gunnar Henderson, and Shohei Ohtani.
Nice.
Interesting. So Judge has 32 homers. He leads the league. He's number one, 83 ribbies, number one. Runs scored, he's got he's fifth in the league. Hits, he's 10th in the league. Walks, he's second. Average, he's eighth. On base percentage, he's second, 1 point behind Soto coming into tonight. Slugging, he's first. OPS, he's first, right? Then you go to Shohei Ohtani. So he's homers, he's second in the league. He's got 28. He's got 65 ribbies. He's sixth in OPS, which is sixth. He's second in OPS with 1,037. He's got a batting average of 315, which is no longer the top anymore because now Kwan and Yelich both qualify. So now he falls to fourth at 315. He has 72 runs scored, which makes him second. He's got 22 doubles, makes him 10th in that category. 49 walks, makes him fifth. 21 stolen bases and 23 attempts, by the way, for Ohtani. Seventh in stolen bases. On base percentage is 401, so he's eighth. Slugging, 636, so he's second. So you see these two guys having amazing stats. Then you look at Gunnar Henderson, who nobody's talking about, all coming into today. Homers, he's third, 27. Ribbies, he's ninth with 61. Runs scored, he leads the league with 77. Hits, 104, he's sixth. Triples, he's fifth with six. Fact is that Duran has 10 already, and Bobby Witt has nine. These guys have a chance at 20 triples. I mean, it's pretty – we don't see that every day.
Right? Willie Wilson numbers.
Yeah, exactly. We haven't seen it since Willie Wilson, Vince Coleman, Willie McGee type stuff, right? Walks, he's eighth with 47. On-base percentage, he's 11th with 393. Slugging, he's third with 600. OPS, 983, he's third. Hitting, he's hitting 293, which doesn't have him in the top 15, but he's close. And he's got 14 stolen bases and 15 attempts. The funny thing is that Judge has overrun these two guys' stats a little bit. But when you read about what Ohtani and Gunnar are doing, these guys are – if Judge has a swoon, Gunnar could easily win the MVP.
Oh, absolutely.
Shohei, I think, is such a sure thing right now in the NL because of what he's doing and because the Dodgers are performing. But Gunnar – I mean, and Judge has been outstanding, you know, I mean, with all his stats. But I just thought that that was cool. Couple other quick things. We mentioned it already. Now, Kwan's hitting 363, which is light years above everybody else now that he qualifies, and Yelich at 331. Witt is third. He's moved up to 324. He's hot. Then Ohtani and Profar. De La Cruz, Gino's favorite stat. He's got 45 steals already. He's on pace for 90. He's on 90. Pace for 90. He could get 100. Wow. So Chris Sale, the MLB's first 12-game winner, 12-3, 274 ERA, a .93 WHIP. That is a hitting 201 against him. But a couple of pitchers I want to talk about, okay? Grayson Rodriguez, Baltimore is 11-3 with a 3.52 ERA, WHIP of 1.21, batting average against a 2.36. And he's 11-3 with that. Mitch Keller's 10-5 with a 3.40 ERA, WHIP of 1.22, batting average against a 2.53. Now you go to the other end of it.
Between those two, at least Rodriguez has an offense around him. Pirates offense is awful. The fact that Keller's 10-5 with those numbers is mind-boggling because the Pirates, we just saw them, even though they exploded with seven home runs against the Mets the other night.
They don't hit.
They do not hit.
So these are guys that are the haves. Now we look at the have-nots, guys that have pitched well that do not get any support. Logan Gilbert, 6-5 with a 2.94 ERA, WHIP of .9.
I know that well.
196. Gary Crochet, 6-6 with a 3.08 ERA, a WHIP of .97, batting average against .203. Again, 6-6. Cutter Crawford, 5-7 with a 3.24 ERA, WHIP of 1.07, batting average against of .207. So all three of these guys with better numbers than Keller, arguably better numbers than Grayson Rodriguez. They're just not getting the wins. Just the way kind of baseball goes sometimes. That's baseball, Susan, as a we would hear from John Sterling every now and again. So just wanted to throw those stats at you rather than just talk about how bad Mitch Garver is. And, you know, lead it with there. Any other baseball points, boys?
Now that's an interesting name you brought up, Garrett Crochet. You know, he's one that 25, still got a couple of years of control. You know, a lot of people saying, you know, the White Sox are sellers. They can get a king's ransom for Garrett Crochet. Are you buyers this year on Crochet? And the reason I'm asking you this is his first year as a starter. He pitched in 21 through 54 games, had Tommy John surgery, missed all of 22, came back last year through 12 innings in the majors, 25 innings total, including the minors. And this year, he's already at 105. Pitching well, pitching great. But going back to our conversation from, you know, 20 minutes ago about pitch counts and innings limits and everything else, at what point is he going to be shut down, or is his agent going to say, you're shutting him down?
I got to be honest, if I'm the White Sox, I don't know if I could sell my entire franchise on getting rid of Robert and getting rid of Crochet. I think that's the only future that only reason anyone goes to the park there. I don't know. I mean, you look at the rest of that lineup, it's a bunch of guys that can hit homers and stuff like that and hit 220. It's not really good. The rotation, they got rid of Cease already. How many talented young arms are you supposed to get rid of if you're Chicago? But I would not be a buyer on him, I don't think, for this year. It depends on how many years of control. If I have two more years of control, I am a buyer. But I'm not getting anything out of him this year.
Yeah, because this year you're going to worry about at what point does he A, either start to regress because the workload gets to be too much, or B, he just, you know, he's going to run out of gas, or at what point does, you know, do agents get involved here at some point, unfortunately, and start to tell teams, hey, you know, we've got to watch this guy, you know, we've got to protect him long term. We're worried about 2 years from now when he reaches free agency. We want to make sure he's eligible for his $30 million a year contract.
No, you're right. I mean, listen, if you're the Mets, are you buying, Kev?
I would.
I think you have to for the next couple of years.
And that's a good point, because if you're the White Sox, you're probably not trading them in your division to one of those teams, right? So after that, if you're looking at teams in contention, you're looking at teams with some big players on them in the AL. But if you go to the NL, if you're the Mets, maybe you're a buyer. If you're Milwaukee or St. Louis, maybe you're a buyer. You know, if the Dodgers, you know, you never rule out the Dodgers for throwing around money on somebody. You know, throwing a couple of minor leaguers and they're in it. I'm just – listen – if you're Atlanta and you think because of all your injuries, you're a player short, maybe you're willing to give up a couple of minor leagues.
Dodgers need starters.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying.
With Yamamoto out, with Glasnow out, Miller just got sent down today because he's been awful.
Yep.
You know,
I mean,
the problem is if you can't get innings, is he going to help you this year?
Well, I think that's where the whole thing comes into play.
A team like the Dodgers would be interesting because you can – plug in Crochet right now when they need him desperately now. And if you can get Glasnow and Yamamoto and Kershaw back after the All-Star break, where you can get Crochet into the bullpen to help him to help you out down the stretch, that might be a team that really in contention could use Crochet as a weapon because they will have starters coming back.
Yep.
Where you don't need him to be the starter.
I agree. Yep. I think a team like that is a team that could, you know, get involved in this. So I got one other thing, and that's the All-Star Game rosters got announced. Yankees had three guys. Judge, Soto, Holmes. Mets had one, Alonso. A lot of talk out there about snubs. I know, you know, for me, it gets very difficult to look at who doesn't make this roster because – the fans are voting on, you know, the 10 starters, 9 starters, including the DH. They're voting, you know, so those guys are set. And then because of the way the major leagues are set up, they have to take a representative from each team. So that limits who you can take and not take. And then you get into position eligibility and, you know, I only have 3 outfielders, but I have, you know, 6 shortstops. I can't take all these shortstops. You know, for me, unless you see somebody that is completely absurd that wasn't taken, I never really get too upset. The one guy locally we thought that should have gotten on this roster was Lindor. You know,
I mean, between the 3 Mets that were in contention, you would rate Alonso 3rd behind Lindor and Nimmo probably.
Mm-hmm.
And Lindor, you know, one stat if you wanted to use WAR. Fangraphs WAR, you know, the top 24, Lindor at 13 is the only one in the top 24 not to make the All-Star team.
Right.
Why? Why? Because Trey Turner was voted in as a starter. And the guy we mentioned, Ellie De La Cruz, you're not going to not send him with his
food. He's too exciting a ball play. He's too exciting.
You got to take De La Cruz. So therefore, Lindor gets squeezed out. You've got enough outfielders, and all of a sudden you've got Pete there because they also want him to participate in the home run derby.
That's one of the points. And then the other one is that really first baseman in the NL on this roster is only Bryce Harper and Freddie Freeman. There really isn't any other first baseman on this roster. So if you're not taking Alonso and you're taking Lindor, let's say, then you got to take another first baseman. So then you got to figure out a way to probably get somebody like Christian Walker in here from Arizona. And then you're taking somebody else off the roster, maybe one of the outfielders like, you know, Reynolds, Ramos, Merrill, Hernandez. Yeah, you know, so you're going into all these things. So listen, I know sometimes everybody looks at it and then they're confused and how come this guy didn't get in? But unless you see somebody that's completely absurd, it really comes down for me to numbers and, you know, fan votes and position eligibility and one guy from every team. So any other baseball points, guys?
And I think to me, growing up with the All-Star game too, we didn't have cable. We didn't have ESPN. We didn't have, you know, games every night on Fox Sports and all these other stations where the All-Star game was maybe your one chance to see some of these guys.
Yep.
That, how could you not include him? You know, if somebody gets missed, all right, we miss him in the All-Star game, but, you know, I'll see him five more times in the next 2 weeks because of the games that are on TV.
Yep.
So I think that also plays into the fact that snubs, all right, we're still going to watch him play.
Yep, agreed. All right, let's shift over to soccer. We got Copa America and Euro 2024 to talk about. We should start with Euro. Let's start with the Euro. The two entrants in the finals are Spain and England. You guys want to talk about how we got there, Kev?
Sure. The first semifinal in Euro was on Tuesday. Spain beats France 2-1. Interesting for France, you know, Mbappe, very quiet for the Euros. He was held scoreless. No goals.
I wonder if that mass from the broken bones affected him. I wonder if he just didn't like playing with that.
Very possible. I mean, he's way too talented to not score. But France went up early, 1-0. And then the 16-year-old kid, Lamine Yamal, scores in the 21st minute for Spain. The youngest player ever to score in the Euros. And what's been interesting is that Spain, especially in the knockout rounds, were careful with what time he could play till. Because Germany has these child labor laws. Now, there may be some wiggle room with athletes and everything else, but anybody under the age of 18 can't work past 11 o'clock. And the start time of some of these games was pushing them where they had to take them out in the 70th minute or 75th minute. Otherwise, they would risk some fines from the German labor board because their child labor laws were limiting him from playing past 11 o'clock. Man. It was unbelievable. Once they reached the knockout rounds, they said, you know what? We're playing to win. You know, if we have to play a fine, we'll pay a fine. That's fine. But then Danny Olmo scored about 4 minutes later in the 25th minute, and Spain held line, did a good job of really not giving France too much, you know, in that second half.
I agree.
You know, France, you never felt like France was right there to score. And they won 2-1. Darren?
Just a quick point. Actually, the interesting thing with Spain was the quarterfinal against Germany. The Germans, the game was tied. Germany kicks a ball, blatant handball, not call.
Yeah.
They miss it. And then they come back and score with about 2 minutes to go in regulation to win the match, or 2 minutes to go in the extra time to win the match. But it was a heartbreaking way. Both England and Spain, grabbed, and we'll talk about England in a little bit, grabbed a victory from the jaws of defeat a couple times in this tournament. And, Spain and England both certainly deserve to be in, but sometimes that quarterfinal match was sometimes those matches are great, and that was a really great one. Anyway,
was a goal. That was a goal in the 119th minute, by the way.
Yeah,
in extra time.
It's crazy.
And they should have had a handball free kick, penalty kick.
Penalty kick.
About 3 minutes earlier, they didn't get the call.
I mean, the arms dangling away.
It was
from
so
the
late. Hit him in the hand. I don't know what you could do.
Away for the body. It wasn't like he was tucked in, like, oops, it hit him in the hand because his arm was tucked in or something. You know, no, this was blatantly out there. He didn't make a play on the ball, but his arm was out there. How is that not a penalty? I don't know.
Kind of the definition of it, my friend.
Yep.
Listen, I had no dog in the fight. I just felt bad for Germany. You know, because it was a bad call. I was probably rooting for Spain the whole match. I mean, it had nothing to do with that. I just thought it was a weird call. Then they come back and they score with that header late. In the 119th minute, like you said, G, and that propelled them through, and then they outplayed France.
And then England, Netherlands today, 2-1, very similar game in that, you know, Netherlands comes out 7th minute, Xavi Simons scores to give Netherlands the early lead, and then the controversial play, Harry Kane is in the box, half volley on the ball. And he gets caught. The Dutch defender comes through, spikes up, and just after Kane makes contact, the spikes come in and get Kane on the foot. They had to go to VAR review. VAR determines that it was a penalty in the area. Kane gets a spot and converts on the penalty kick.
Yep.
Did you think it was a penalty, G?
I think it was close enough that I can't argue with it either way.
Even on review, was it close enough that review was review enough to say, yes, it definitely needed to be overturned?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I thought when it first happened that I thought it was probably a penalty. They went to VAR, and I was kind of telling myself, this is going to get called a penalty here, you know.
Yeah, I think that because the spikes were up, I think that's what caused it to be the penalty. If he's coming in with the spikes up and defending that way, that's usually going to get the penalty call. If he's down, if the spikes are down, I don't think it's a penalty.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
So you both agree with the call, then. I didn't see it. You guys both agree with the call.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I agree. And then we get the goal in the 90th minute.
And I tell you, both teams had chances back and forth.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it was a very competitive, very back and forth type game. It was not a, you know, we're going to sit back and play for penalties or anything like that. Both teams went for it. Good action back and forth. In the 90th minute, Ollie Watkins, who coincidentally subbed in for Harry Kane, he gets the ball inside the right side of the box, crossbody, past the defender De Bruyne, past the goalie, just tucked it inside the left post and gives England the lead in the 90th minute. They were able to withstand the 3 minutes or so of stoppage time, and they advanced to play Spain in the final on Sunday.
And just coincidentally, so England beat the Netherlands today, and in the quarters, the Netherlands got past Turkey 2-1 because of an own goal by Turkey in the 76th minute. Yep. A shot in the box, he turned around, hit off him into his own goal, and that was how they got through, preserved the 2-1 victory for the Netherlands over Turkey.
And Turkey got a late red card in that game, too, as they were trying to mount a comeback.
Yep. They did. We're all watching some Copa America stuff going on right now. That's pretty crazy in the 7 minutes of extra time right now.
Anything else with Euro?
No, Spain plays England in the finals. England's in the finals for the third consecutive time, which is one of those things. So,
Darren? England's first time in the finals where it wasn't on English soil.
Wow.
Nice.
And third time, but first time, not on English soil, so it's a big deal. Kev, who wins it?
Spain's too talented. Spain wins this one, Gino? 2-1.
Yeah.
Okay, 2-1. Gino?
I got Spain 3-1.
I got Spain 2-0. Okay, so we're all in the same boat. Once again, it's nothing more exciting to listen to the three of us talk about the same thing over and over again. Okay, great.
In the Copa. So we'll start with the team that is through. The Argentinian squad is through. The quarterfinal matchup they play was much more interesting to talk about. The semifinal, they beat Canada 2-0. It was just hot, sweaty, humid at the Meadowlands last night. Argentina, very patient. About halfway through the first half, they sprung Alvarez through the middle for a goal in the 22nd minute. Second half, you know, again, Argentina played this game in control, I thought, for the most part. They were able to get free. Fernandez takes a shot, and Messi comes in and redirects it by the goalie for his first Copa goal this year. Argentina wins 2-0 fairly easy.
Yep.
Anything to add about that game?
Yeah, Canada has scored a grand total of 2 goals in 5 games.
Yep. But they made the semis.
I figured that was something that'd be something fun to share. They kept advancing with 0-0s, 1-0 games and stuff like that, and penalty kick time. But I don't know if they even had any penalty kicks, but they didn't do much offensively. And once they were down a goal, it was over.
As we were talking quarterfinal matchups, their quarterfinal matchup was interesting against Ecuador last week. This was a 1-0 game to late. And in the first minute of added time, Ecuador ties it on a goal. So they go to penalties at 1-1. Because in Copa, they don't play overtime or extra time. They go right to penalties until the finals.
I actually like the extra time more than I like going straight to penalties, but that's just me.
But Emi Martinez, who looks like one of the best goalies on the planet, if not the best, he came up with two saves on penalties against Ecuador, and Argentina wins 4-2. Despite Messi missing on his first penalty take, Martinez bailed him out, and they advanced and were able to take care of Canada pretty easily.
Absolutely. I you know, just the best team in the world advanced. Not much really to say. Argentina's ranked one for a reason.
They won the World Cup last time it was played, last year. Did they play in 23 or 22?
No, they played in 22.
They played in 22. I forgot with the COVID if it got
the next one, I think, is 26. Yeah.
26, so. Yep.
Which is
and
here.
Then, but 4 years ago, last time Copa America was played, they won Copa America. So they're going for three straight major tournament wins here.
No, absolutely.
And just final, they would be taking on Colombia.
Played the whole second half with 10 men.
Hold on to beat Uruguay 1-0. Boy, Suarez in the second half had a couple of chances there. Hit the post on one. Just wide on another shot. But like you said, Darren.
Pushing and shoving, which you always love to see at the end of these games. There's always pushing and shoving. These South American teams just hate each other. And it's actually like somewhat of a mini melee. It's fantastic. Yep. You can't make it up.
So now you're looking at Argentina-Colombia in the final. Also on Sunday. This one's at night. Any predictions?
I'm going to take Colombia. Take Colombia 2-1.
Gino?
Argentina 3-0.
Wow. Colombia has a 20-something game unbeaten streak. I think it ends. I think Argentina wins 3-2 in penalties. 2-2, they win in penalties.
Okay. I'm going with Colombia. I'm right. I'm lone wolfing it. All right, good enough. Last thing in soccer, right? You going to bring them up, Kev?
Go ahead, Darren.
Berhalter's out. That's it. Yay. It's done. That's the name of our show tonight. So now we thinking of like Jurgen Klopp, I think last week was the guy you were thinking of.
Yep.
The guy at Liverpool. You know, right now he's probably the guy they want. The rumor is that he probably wouldn't want to go somewhere where he can't win. So Steve Cherundolo, from what I'm reading, is probably the favorite, the coach of L.A., to get the job. Steve played on the national team. But like you said last week, Kev, they might need to go outside of the usual realm to try to find someone special. It just hasn't seemed to work. They mentioned Bob Bradley again. They mentioned it a bunch of different guys. I think that they mentioned Terry, the great player from France. But he bombed when he coached at Monaco, so why would you bring in a bad coach? I think that it's I hope it's not against Steve Cherundolo. I have no idea what he could do, but you want to see somebody special, I think. And the U.S. national team with the hosting the World Cup can't do what they did here in Copa America. You've got to find a way out of the group. You got to find a way even into the quarters, if not the semis, to show that American soccer is something that's formidable, because right now it just ain't.
I mean, last time we went outside the box was for Klinsmann. Didn't we have our best success under Klinsmann in the last in our lifetime?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, you know, listen, Bradley had a couple of moments. So did but Klinsmann, you know, they beat Ghana, they got out of the group. I mean, there were some things that went on there that were pretty good.
Yep.
I think they won a gold cup under Klinsmann, beat Mexico. I mean, there were some things that happened.
Yeah.
Apparently my daughter's upset. Sorry, guys.
She just found out Uruguay lost.
You know, Uruguay has a lot of Italian surnames, and she was just rooting hard.
All right, so let's go around the rest of world of sports. Where do you guys want to start? Anything? Let's start NBA. So Just a couple of points. LeBron decided to take a slight discount.
I was stunned.
After $140 million over two, he decided to take a $4 million cut. So, you know.
The max was, what, 106, and he took 102?
Yeah.
What was that? So Bronny could get his $2.5 million a year?
Absolutely.
Bronny, we should talk about, G. I mean, right?
Go ahead.
He had a second game tonight, but first game he was 2 for 9, 0 for 3 from 3, 0 for 2 from the line. 2 rebounds, 2 assists in 21 minutes. He had 4 points. Tonight he followed that up with a whopping 3 points in 29 minutes. He had like 4 rebounds, I think 5 rebounds and 3 assists. But this is a guy that couldn't get on the court much at USC, that they're trying to force feed into everyday basketball. It's going to be interesting to see what his role will be on the Lakers. Because if it's anything prominent or anything even regular bench minutes, it would be a travesty. There'd be a better player that should be playing over. It's nothing against the kid. It really is nothing against the kid. He's been through enough medical. I'm sorry, Kev.
I was going to say, what he went through last summer with the cardiac issues to be able to get back on the court in college last year and play most of the season, you know, mostly as a role player. No, not big minutes, anything else. But the fact that he was able to get back on the court, you give him a hell of a lot of credit for.
Absolutely.
But he's nowhere near NBA ready, if he ever will be.
Now listen, you never know if he grows into it, you know, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, he didn't show it last year. He's not showing it this year. The competition's only going to get harder as he gets out of summer league. It's hard to imagine him really being a factor, despite, you know, LeBron talking about how, oh, me and Bronny and three others could be, you know, stop it. You know, just stop it. You're embarrassing yourself.
Around the rest of the NBA, the Warriors wound up getting Buddy Hield from the Sixers. And then there was a three-team trade where DeMar DeRozan finally got out of Chicago. He went to the Kings, Harrison Barnes to the Spurs. Duarte went to the Bulls with some picks. And the other thing that happened was the Knicks added some players into the trade with the Nets to open up cap space. I don't understand how they can open up space by adding more players into a trade that I thought was done, but apparently they can't. So, hey, I'll throw somebody else in later. What are you going to do?
With these trades, the Hield trade, wasn't that a 6-team trade? I believe it would have turned out to be one of the teams got cash as part of the trade. Yeah.
I mean, Billy Bean, fill up my soda machine. You know,
the NBA salary cap is just so convoluted. It's amazing that anybody can understand what the hell they're doing.
Makes the NFL look easy, Kev. Makes the NFL look easy.
It does.
It's so sad.
Darren, you had NHL point.
Just a couple things. Sam Reinhart signs an 8-year extension with Florida. Keep him there for a while. Had a monster year. Jessica Campbell, Seattle Kraken. First full-time female coach in NHL history. So, Seattle being the city, not a surprise that they would be the city that would wake up first on this. Everything else, we just had the free agency and the draft. We'll start seeing a little bit more as we get into, the camps and stuff like that and see who's signing with who and all that other stuff with the late free agency. But right now, not much going on in the wonderful world of hockey.
Okay. I'll move over to NFL for a moment, and that is the only thing really for me that was going on was the first two episodes of Hard Knocks aired, which is highlighting New York Giants offseason. So I know you guys aren't huge fans of it, but the first episode starts basically with the last game of last season for the Giants. It's a lot of GM stuff with Joe Shane. For me, I actually liked it only because they talked about salary cap. They talked about how they were going to maneuver a little bit. It was a little interesting, other than just, you know, listening to football stuff. But here's the drawback on it, and that is, unlike the regular Hard Knocks, this is stuff that's happened 3 months ago. So, you know, they're talking – the draft, according to the show, hasn't happened yet. Darren?
Just to break another way, the Uruguayan players are now fighting the Colombian fans. I'm not making it up. You can't make this stuff up. Sorry, G. Go ahead.
That's all right. That's some breaking news, let me tell you.
I was like, oh, my God, that Uruguayan players went into the crowd to fight the Colombian fans. Anyway, go ahead.
So
these two teams just don't like each other. Anyway, go ahead.
It's a lot of GM stuff going on. Then they get to episode two, and one of the first things that comes up is basically Joe Shane is pictured reading the email from the NFL that says your new salary cap is $255,400. So that's interesting that his other staff members are talking to him. Oh, we have extra room. What can we do? Do you think we could do this? They go to the draft combines. So now you're getting some kind of behind the scenes stuff of what some of these teams are doing at the draft combine. And a lot of it is in one of the suites. They all basically are in a different suite, every team. So they're all watching with binoculars, which I thought was interesting. Right. So they all have somebody down low, but like the GMs and all them are in the box with binoculars watching what's going on. And then they did a little behind the scenes kind of thing with what they do with some of these players where they bring them into the room and talk to them. So you got Dable talking to some of these quarterbacks, actually going through plays with them and telling the quarterback to repeat the play back to him on what he wants. There's a couple where he's talking to, I know he talked to Jaden Daniels at one point, and he's like, I'm going to give you a play and I want you to draw it on the whiteboard here. And he's got to draw it basically. So it was a little interesting, I have to tell you. However, again, this is all happened 3 months ago, and I know Jaden Daniels isn't going there, right? He talked to different wide receivers. He talked to Marvin Harrison Jr. They talked to a couple of receivers, and yet we know they're taking neighbors, right? So at the end of the day, they take neighbors, obviously, because the draft has happened already. So from that part, you know, it was good and bad. There was a couple of different things. Another quick little scene is, Joe Shane goes and talks to the New England GM and basically said, can I have a minute? And basically tells them, if you guys are undecided with the number three pick, make sure I'm one of your phone calls. Again, we know nothing happens because they take Drake May, but nevertheless. And episode two ends with Shane on the phone with Barkley and his agent telling him, we're not going to put you on we're not going to make you a franchise. We're not going to put a tag on you. We want you to go and explore the market. But, you know, we have your word that you're going to come back to us and tell us, you know, what you're going to get before you sign anything. That's basically how it ends. I'm assuming next episode will be the start of free agency where Barkley will basically tell them goodbye. So, you know, again, listen, I like the behind-the-scenes stuff. I really did. I haven't seen a, you know, off-season kind of show before, but the fact that it was 3 months ago kind of takes away a little bit from it. So,
gotcha. All right, that was interesting stuff.
Yeah,
that's NFL Hard Knocks. Let's move to
just a couple of quick things on NFL. Camp is coming. Rookies that show up this Saturday, Baltimore, 7:13. And so it's coming, the Jets and the Giants. The Giants are next Tuesday. The Jets rookies are next Thursday. And then all the vets report on 7/23. So we are 2 weeks away from all the veterans reporting and training camp. So we're right there. Byron Jones of the Dolphins abruptly retires at the age of 30 for the cornerback for the Dolphins. Hopefully everything's okay with Byron Jones. But, you know, a little surprise leaving some money on the table there. And that was all I had with the NFL, bud.
All right, Kev, want to move to a little golf? Let's talk a little golf.
Scottish Open this week. Rory McIlroy is going to go try to defend his title there this week. Tune up for the British Open, of course, next week at Royal Troon. And that's what we're really going to be more focused on, much more the British Open rather than the Scottish Open. Darren, I think you had some odds.
Yeah, just a couple of quick things. Right now, the favorite is Scheffler for the Open Championship, not for the Scottish. 15-4, because they do it really? Like that now.
Scheffler?
Yep. Scheffler, shocking. McIlroy, 8-1. Third is Xander, 10-1. Fourth is Bryson and Oberg at 12-1. So those are the top five guys in odds. The last three winners are Royal Troon, just so everybody remembers. Stenson won in 16. Todd Hamilton in 04. And Justin Leonard won in 97. So Royal Troon will definitely be a challenge for all these guys. Brian Harman's the defending champ. We'll get much more into the Open next week.
And Royal Troon, in case anybody doesn't know, is on the western coast of the UK, by the way. So you'll see some great, great views. I'm sure they'll be showing you great views of the western coast. One other golf point, and that is Keegan Bradley was named the Ryder Cup captain for 2025. So
right here on Long Island.
Yep. Kev, Wimbledon.
A little tennis action here. Women's side. Boy, upsets galore early on, especially. You know, you're looking at the way the brackets went. Swiatek, the one seed, lost in the third round. Number two, Gauff, lost in the fourth. Number three, Sabalenka, withdrew before the tournament even started. Pegula, the five, was out in the second round. So that leaves you quarterfinals today, where the fourth seed, Rybakina, won. She'll face the 31st seed, Krejcikova, in the semifinals. The other one, the 7th seed, Paolini, the Italian, who had the nice run in the French Open last month. She'll take on unseeded Dana Vekic, who defeated a qualifier in the quarterfinals here. Great name on Australian, Lulu Sun. Great name.
There we go.
So women's side, you know, it's Rybakina and Paolini, at least you've heard of. The other two, couldn't tell you the first thing about the other two. Okay. Men's side a little bit more to form. They had the quarterfinals. The one upset really. Actually, there were two upsets. The first one, Medvedev beat Sinner in five sets. That's a five seed over the one seed.
But they're so close, those two.
But to me, there's not a huge difference between the two of them. They went to five sets. I mean, it was a toss-up match. So the fact that Medvedev won is not a huge thing. Alcaraz beat the 12th seeded Tommy Paul from the U.S. In four sets. So you set up a Medvedev-Alcaraz matchup. They both have majors. Alcaraz is the defending Wimbledon champion. Medvedev did win the 2021 U.S. Open. So, you know, they do have majors there. On the other side of the bracket, Musetti, the 25th seed Italian, beat the other American who made the quarterfinals, Taylor Fritz, in five sets.
Tommy Fritz. Isn't it Tommy?
Tommy Paul, maybe Taylor Fritz.
Oh, I screwed him up. Taylor Fritz, Tommy Paul. That's why I screwed it up.
Yep. I made sure I wrote it down correctly this time. I didn't want any.
I did not.
Adley Hutchinson.
Well, I got Lorenzo Musetti right, but I don't have the other one. Sorry, pal.
And the biggest thing was probably Djokovic gets the walkover. The 9th seed, DeMorner, got injured late in his previous match in the fourth round. Did got out to finish off the match, but could not answer the bell. And Djokovic, without having to play, advances to the semis, facing Musetti, who, you know, had to go five sets against Fritz. So if there's anything the 30-something, 37-year-old guy needs, is to have the extra rest against the young kid who just played five sets the day before.
He needed it. The one thing you say about Joker is he got into it with the Wimbledon crowd.
He did.
He thought that they were booing him. They were yelling "Rune," apparently, according to the announcers. And he kind of went off on him a little bit. You know what you did. You know who you – I mean, it was kind of like, you know, Joker's no joke. But at 37 years old, I think he's going to end up going down as the best ever just because of the longevity. I know he had a couple of years off in between. But, wow, he still plays at the top of his game at this level. It's not like he's like reaching back or getting a little lucky or just surviving. He wins convincingly. He's a freak of nation.
Yeah. So I think he's got, you know, so he should have the clear path. You would think he should be able to handle Musetti in the semis.
You should. Musetti's 25th.
And then Alcaraz Medvedev wouldn't surprise me if that goes five. I think Alcaraz will win it. Maybe
Alcaraz
four.
Is a better player, I think, but.
But wouldn't surprise you if it went five.
No, not at all.
And probably, to me, I would pick, you know, Djokovic, Alcaraz in the finals.
Who wins it then?
I think Alcaraz.
Jake?
Alcaraz.
I'm going to ride the Joker. Okay, there we go.
I'll be rooting for Joker, but I think Alcaraz wins.
No, listen, I'm just to be different. That's why both of you went one way, I went the other. If Gino would have went, I don't know what I would have picked. So there you go. I think it's a really close matchup. It's going to really depend on how much he has to expend himself in the semis.
Yep.
Joker.
All right. Anything else, guys?
And NCAA football, 45 days away from kickoff. And Danny Hurley has signed a 6-year, $50 million deal to stay with the Connecticut Huskies. Kind of what I got. You guys have anything else? We'll be wrapping up.
I have nothing else.
Again, a potpourri show that should have been short, that went long. 35 minutes on baseball. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Gino, here with Kevin, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. Gino thinks they should be on pitch counts. Kevin and I think that pitchers should be able to pitch. It doesn't really matter what you like. I'm just kidding, G. Download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, whatever you like. Please follow us on Facebook. Like Gino said earlier, we have a lot of followers. We were looking to grow that number, looking to keep growing on Instagram and Facebook. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.